Hey, hit me!
Are you ready for the deadliest news, issues, comments, and people? Well, on now is National Talk Black with Trundy Trev, going live from BBM through the National Indigenous Radio Service.
Back with Trendy Trev.
Yeah, Yanni with the Bulldog and here, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev Murray from the Curry, live at the First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns on Yindinji Country, BBM Bumblebee Media, 98.7 FM, and we go across the country thanks to the NERS, National News Radio Service, for your daily program, National Talk Black. Now, second First Nations child removal complaint filed in Human Rights Commission. Shine Lewis has filed a complaint in the Australian Human Rights Commission against the Department of Communities in Western Australia, alleging the department has been removing First Nations children from their families, discriminatory in what has been dubbed a second wave of stolen generation. Look, with that, I'm going to catch up with Yarn there with Caitlin Wilson, Shine Lewis, Special Counsel. And on the line, we got Caitlin. Good morning, Caitlin. How are you?
Morning. Well, thank you. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you very much for coming to the program. Where are you based, Caitlin?
I'm based in Brisbane.
In Brisbane. Okay. Thank you very much for coming to the program. So we're talking second First Nation child removal complaint filed in Human Rights Commission. Shine Lewis has filed a complaint with the Australian Human Rights Commission. So shed some light, please, on this situation.
So as you said, it's the second complaint that we filed. The first complaint was for the state of New South Wales. The second complaint relates to the state of WA. Mm-hmm. And the complaint is alleging that the Department of Child Protection has engaged in unlawful discrimination in their investigation of First Nations children and families, in the removal of First Nations children from their families, and again in their failure to reunify First Nations children with their families following removal.
So to be part of this class action investigation, what is required? What's the criteria?
So there's three groups of eligible people. The first is adults who were themselves removed as children and were placed into state care with a non-First Nations care, or they were not reunified with their family. The second group of people is those parents, cultural parents and carers, who've had a child removed from their care by the department, placed into state care, again, with the non-First Nations care, or again, they were not restored to their care. And then the third group of people is people who were nominated to provide care for a First Nations child who was removed, or they applied to be a carer for a child that was removed, and the department either did not assess them or their application to care was rejected.
So these laws, they come into play, even though this happened years ago, and are they strong? Is there a strong foundation in regard to these laws, these claims?
Yes, so we're looking right back until the 5th of March, 1992.
Okay.
And while the legislation varies from state to state,
yes,
they all have what's called the Aboriginal Child Placement Principles, and that effectively requires when children are removed, they are to be placed in a hierarchy, and family should be looked at first,
yes,
kin, community. Again, it differs from state to state, but there's usually a requirement that children be placed in close proximity to their community, and only as a last resort should they be placed with a non-Aboriginal care. But what we're actually finding is that the compliance with that is very limited.
Okay.
So while we've got this legislation that on the face of it looks really great, compliance is the primary issue that we're seeing.
And where are we at regarding could there be charges laid, or could there be compensation to families? Where are we at in that situation?
So what we're looking to do is obtain compensation for the families as well as drive some legislative change. Those are the two main outcomes that we're seeking in the investigation, in the filing of the complaint, and eventually in any class action that's filed.
And Caitlin, what's the turnaround in regard to the outcomes? How far are we at with that?
The Australian Human Rights complaint might take anywhere from 6 months to 8 months to be reviewed and terminated. From there, we can file a federal court application. Typically, class actions can take 3 to 5 years, but there's a lot of variables, so that's just a rough guide as to the time frame we're looking at.
Fight the good fight. Caitlin, thank you so very much. Look, all the best to you, and we'll be on soon. Please keep in touch. Thank you.
Thanks very much for having me on.
Bye, Caitlin. Bye-bye.
Bye for now.
There it is, Caitlin Wilson, Shine Lawyers Special Counsel, and talking about the second First Nations child removal complaint filed in Human Rights Commission. And Shine Lawyers has filed a complaint in Australian Human Rights Commission about against the Department of Communities in Western Australia, alleging the department has been removing First Nations children from their families discriminatorily in what is being dubbed a second wave of stolen generation. It is the second complaint filed by the firm against the Department of Child Protection, which may lead to a class action for the affected families. The first complaint was filed against the Department of Communities and Justice, New South Wales, in the AHRC in January this year. So there it is. As they say, oil always rises to the top. Fight the good fight. Have you seen Yan Up Strong? Add to the conversation here. National Talk Black.
Yeah, we hit the streets, begging for the people to see what our life worth, but they don't want to believe, claiming all lives matter, but you ain't at the rally. I stand on the shoulders of the fan that come before me just the same as you, fan. So what you doing with the fact that you inherited this inheritance? Took the privilege, y'all took the wealth, took the lives of innocent boys and girls, still denying our experience, made to feel lesser. I work with these kids and they telling me they fed up. I'm working with these white folk who know enough for better. I'm working with the government, another pet, make a new day seem rich. Nothing changed, we afraid. We glorifying mediocrity up to this day. Let's be real about it, and maybe then we can transform this country, heal the pain for my great-grandmama, for my nana, for my cousins, for my sisters and my mama, for our brothers up in lockup, for these white folk who sick and confused, and for these pleas who sick enough to treat us the way that they do, for these politicians who forgot about what it means to operate from a place of humanity, love, forget the pride and self-righteousness. This is gonna take a whole lot more than your good intent. Come on, let's go.
If only you could see what this all means. Black Lives Matter.
If only you could see what you're doing to me. Let's talk about it. Look, we sacrifice another black voice. Why? Just to prove another white point. Right. I will stand for the justice. I'll tell you what the problem. This is not a problem. This is catastrophic. Mama didn't raise me to become complacent. Now she showed me love in her heart that's so amazing. So I'ma push it forward, praying for the fallen. Dreaming of the day we can look it in the face and that war can't buy for the lies that they preach us. The violence, silent agreements, the pride and deceit. Unwillingness to believe for the nightmare that this down dear to my dream. And I'm dreaming the better ways of a better day and some change that ain't gonna take another couple hundred years. Nothing. We push above where we are, it ain't hard if we all get the courage to get up and get involved with a little bit of love. Come on.
If only you could see what this all means. Black life matters. If only you could see what you're doing to me.
Let's talk about it. Family. Look.
Your black life matters.
Take it slow, baby. Took a
Trevor Tim, 20, Trevor Murray from the Curry, coming to you live from First Station Radio Station here in Cairns on your dingy country, BBM Bumba Brip Media, 98.7 FM. And across the nation, thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service, Yarn Up Strong Your Mob. Now, Young Warrior inspires big chance for sick kids. 7-year-old Gia Smith is uniting for Far North Queensland's champion support for the Children's Hospital Foundation, East Appeal, and the region's sickest and most critical injured kids. We're then going to catch up with Regan Smith, and that's Gia's mum, on the line. Regan, good morning. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks, Trevor. Thanks for having me.
Thank you very much for coming to the program. Just confirming, pronouncing Gia?
Gia. Gia.
Gia, my apologies, and hello to Gia. So, look, a champion she is, a true warrior. So, tell us about your beautiful daughter.
Well, she's now 6 years old, 7 years old, sorry. She was diagnosed with leukemia at 2 years old.
Okay.
So she's doing fantastic now. And being a little bit older and understanding what happened and how lots of people helped her, she's really keen to give back.
Mm, beautiful. Tell us some of the stuff that she goes through as a young girl with leukemia.
So when she was little, I mean, she was only two when she was diagnosed, so she really didn't know what was happening to her.
Yes.
So she was really lucky that all the facilities at the Queensland Children's Hospital and all the facilities that the Children's Hospital Foundation provide make the whole experience, which is quite horrific for any adult, let alone little people. You know, a little bit of fun, because there are so many activities they provide, and music therapy, cuddle carers, things like that, that you just don't think would be helpful. You know, well, you just wouldn't think about that it's actually available. So I make available to you, and the kids absolutely love it.
So hats off to Children's Hospital Foundation, doing a fantastic job looking after our young ones.
Amazing, amazing. Yeah. Just lots of little things, all the little details that you know, you think maybe, you know, they wouldn't feel like doing, or you don't think yourself, because as a parent, you know, you're a passenger on this terrible
exactly.
journey.
Exactly.
That they, they give to your child, yourself, the siblings. And partnered with Woolies over this Easter campaign. I think it's just phenomenal, the opportunity it brings to, I guess, let people in on what's going on that they wouldn't necessarily be aware of.
Well, exactly. We don't know what's happening in people's lives, do we, Regan?
No, that's right. Mm. Everyone does get really wrapped up in their own life, and I was too before this happened to our family.
Yes.
But I guess knowing now, I can't turn a blind eye to it, and any opportunity that we can help out, or now GM able to give back, we're there.
Fantastic. Where does the family live? Where you guys live? Where's home?
So we're based in Mariba.
Oh, Mariba. Okay, sure. Yes, right.
Yeah. And, you know, so to get to Brisbane, or, you know, which was where her treatment was, we were there for 10 months. During her treatment, so we felt like we were a long way from home. We were separated from our son, who's only a year older than Gia.
Okay, yes.
Just the support.
Well, the heartache in that, just being away from your son as well. You know what I mean? So 10 months down there.
Really,
so you were down there with Gia for the 10 months, and your son was up here in Mariba.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, with the rest of our family. So we were really lucky to have a lot of people behind us and support us with funding, because they would help us fly Oscar to Brisbane to see us every so often.
Sure, yes.
But also too, when we were at the hospital, because Gia was so sick and she often couldn't play, and she was in isolation, she wasn't allowed to leave her room. It was really lovely, because the Hospital Foundation provided activities for siblings to little kits that they could bring into the room to play with their sick siblings.
Yes.
Which was really, really lovely. And you just don't think about that sort of stuff when it's happening.
Mm-hmm.
They just make things happen, and it brings, you know, it brings so much sunshine.
Sure. So is Gia home with you now? Are you guys back in Mariba, or where you at?
Yes. So Gia has been in remission for 3 years now. She's seven.
Good.
She's doing really well. We're actually at the Cairns Hospital right now as I'm talking to you, because she's got a blood test today.
Okay.
So she has a 3-monthly blood test, just to keep an eye on her and make sure that nothing's come back.
Sure.
So they do that for 5 years post-treatment, is every, you know, 3 months.
And Gia knows the process now?
Yeah, she's a pro. She's an absolute pro.
Good. Well, she's a champion.
Although, because of all the, you know, the treats and special attention that she got at the Children's Hospital, she is quite demanding, I think, now.
Now,
she, yeah, she gets all to the right. Cairns Hospital and she sort of makes sure the nurses have chopped up that prize box
that,
you know, if she's going to get a needle, there's going to be something at the end of it. So. Oh,
thank you. Not the towel wagging the dog. I'm in control here.
That's right.
And what's her hobbies? What does Gia like? Does she like animals or does she love dancing? Or give us a bit of background.
She loves animals. She does dancing. She does ballet, tap, jazz. Oh. And she does swimming. She plays football. She does singing. I think the whole the journey of, you know, coming through what she's come through and having the second chance, she's not wasting 1 second of it.
She's going all out. Going all out, spinning 45
doing
plates.
Doing as much as she can.
Spinning 45 plates. Mum's taxi. You there, Regan? Oh, it sounds like I lost Regan. Regan, no, I lost Regan. Try again, Regan. Regan, you there? No, I lost Regan. Oh, that was a beautiful yarn. Sorry, Regan. Try a call back. Regan is the mother of Gia and Gia Smith, and 7-year-old, and United Far North Queensland Championship support for the Children's Hospital Foundation. So young Gia underwent a grueling 850 regimen of treatments at Queensland Children's Hospital for far from her Cairns home or Mareeba home, and journey included 23 lumbar pit, punches, 958 blood tests, and 132 chemotherapy doses, and 95 days in hospital isolation. So, look, there it is. You don't know what's going on in people's lives. So be kind, people. Just be kind. A hello, a smile doesn't hurt. And the best exercise for your heart is when you're bending down, lifting somebody up. So give, 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 and don't look for any return. And the man above will look after you anyway. And that way, that process. Have you say Yarn Up Strong. Add to the conversation here. National Talk Black.
Back where they understand that to their mother's land, the children came back.
Yes, very good morning, you Daily Mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, 20, Trev Murray from the Curry. I come to you live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns on Yidinji Country as BBM Bumbadrip Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Radio Service. You can have your survey calls on that daily number, 1-800-422-416. Now, First Nation mothers' trauma of baby removals heard an inquiry, calls to change process. With that, I'm catch up a yarn now with Sister April Laurie, that's South Australia's Commissioner for Aboriginal Children and Young People. On the line, we have April. Good morning, Sister. How are you?
Good morning, Trevor. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you very much for coming to the program. Before we start, Sister, let the mob know who you mob, where you're from.
Yes, thank you, Trevor. So I'm Renin Gugatha from South Australia's far west coast. And I live and work on Kaurna country.
Beautiful.
Here in Adelaide.
Beautiful. Good footprint. Shout out to all the mob there. Thank you very much. Now, you're saying that you've spoken to several mothers as part of an ongoing inquiry into the removal of First Nation children in South Australia whose babies were removed at birth. So, look, shed some light on this. This is, across our country in regard to removal of our babies. But tell us your findings there, please, your inquiry. Thank you.
Well, my inquiry hasn't finalised yet because my report will be released in a couple of weeks.
Okay.
Tabled in Parliament. But through the inquiry and also prior to launching the inquiry, I'd heard from many women about their experiences of having their babies, their infants removed at birth from our birthing hospitals here in South Australia, whether they be in metropolitan Adelaide or in some of our country locations. And what is really concerning is that the rates of removal for newborns is increasing. And we are a small population, but our birthing rates are quite high.
Yes.
And there is great cause for concern when these removals could have been prevented, or these removals could have resulted in a kinship care arrangement.
Well, exactly, yeah. Well, you can't be black on black, hey, April?
That's right.
And you have an AMWAB looking after our children, if that is the case, to keep the children safe, and the goal is to bring the parents and the children back together, isn't it?
Absolutely. And we have enshrined in legislation a very important principle, a rights-based principle that has been around for a number of decades in different ways across state and territory legislation, but it's what we know as the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Child Placement Principle. So, you know, fortunately in Queensland, your legislation there has got the principle enshrined in legislation to the standard of active efforts, which means it is more than just the placement hierarchy about kinship care. It's taking into account the elements that require the system to pay greater attention to prevention.
Yes.
To the way in which families participate and lead decision-making for the child or children, that there is greater emphasis on connection, ensuring that children grow up safely connected with family, community, culture and country.
Yes.
And that we do everything possible to ensure that we have greater partnerships with the Aboriginal community. And
exactly.
That I mean the system that undertakes the child protection work has to have partnerships
exactly.
with the Aboriginal community in a lot of different ways.
A lot of our elders we speak to up here in Far North Queensland, they call the they call it the 21st century stolen generation.
Yeah.
And that's that comes with a lot of weight, a title like that, doesn't it, April?
Yeah. And, you know, that comes with listening with and walking away from meetings and with a heavy heart and saying something has to be done about this.
Yes.
And we can never have a repeat of history, but what we're finding is history is repeating itself.
Mm.
And the very systems
supposed to protect us, is letting us
problems.
Down. Mm. Yeah, plagued with problems. Exactly.
And we keep, the state keeps putting more money into a system that keeps failing our children and our families.
Yeah.
There's no sense in that.
Sure.
You wouldn't do that in the business world, put more good money after bad.
Exactly. Well, and it's taxpayers' money,
and you
can see why.
Services.
Exactly, and taxpayers' money, and taxpayers are getting upset with money being wasted. Well, that's money being wasted. So set a new program that's going to, prevention, but looks after their children, and then that's not then expense, that's investment, is it not, April?
Exactly, and that investment needs to be financial, yep. but also the way in which the system is designed in the early exactly. intervention, mm-hmm. the prevention side. So, you know, I think we've heard this statement before.
Broken record, yeah.
The system gets in family too late when it's too late.
Yep, exactly.
And by then, decisions have been made in the absence of family.
Mm.
So what we're talking about here in South Australia is that in terms of unborn child concerns,
mm.
which is the way in which the system refers to concerns for the unborn child,
mm.
is that there has to be notification to mother, and her family need to be wrapped around her and helping her. And the system needs to acknowledge that family are really important in preventing an unnecessary removal.
Yes.
But to also get the much needed services in at the right time to help the mother with her family, because far too often the mother is denied
exactly
the support and isn't even aware of a notification
mm.
Being made around her circumstances.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you say statements here. Mothers have went outside, for example, to have a cigarette, to come back to find the hospital, find that their baby has been removed. I mean, there's no communication.
Yeah, and mm. and that's the birthing hospital working in with the mm. Child Protection Agency, I would imagine,
exactly.
to
yeah.
have a controlled
yep.
environment where they can do the removal without resistance, without challenge.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's very cruel.
And we as black people, April, we've got the solutions to our problems, and we need to be at the table to put the solutions forward. But they need to come from black people, and we need to be in the discussion big time.
Absolutely, and you only have to hear what community mobs say about the fact that our agency for child protection here in South Australia has very little engagement and partnership mm. with the Aboriginal community to even begin to design the solutions from the Aboriginal community.
Yeah.
Hence the inquiry, where I've managed to hear the voices of, you know, community members, those affected by removals, mm. but also community leaders, elders,
mm.
families, and also Aboriginal children and young people themselves.
Yes.
To give me the information, their experiences about what can the system do.
Okay.
And a lot of the answers lie with our Aboriginal community controlled sector.
Mm.
And because that's about local level people
mm.
working with our families, who know our families the best, and that love and care
mm.
at the local level is what needs to happen. And to be consulted
yes.
and to have input is crucial.
Of course it's crucial. And you know, I've read here that hospital staff are told not to tell the new mother that her baby is about to be removed, and went so far as even leaving letters on the pillow, on the hospital bed pillow.
Well, I think that's a practice that has to stop, because whilst they might be administratively handing out the letter of authority
mm.
on the bed, the legislation doesn't necessarily make them have to give the authority to remove
yeah.
in their hands. They
exactly.
just need to know about it. I mean,
exactly.
it is terrible that mm. we even have the practice, let alone the legislation, that can treat the mother as such.
Mm.
And we have many examples of where there's really bad practice.
Yes.
And that just needs to stop. We
yep,
just
there's
got to
be change in the process, hasn't there, April? There's got to be change.
Absolutely.
Yep.
And some of this can be fixed up very quickly.
Of course.
In terms of changing practice.
Of course.
I think there's a lot of hard work to be had to challenge a culture within an organisation dealing with the culture of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people
yes.
and their families, particularly children. And,
April, that's not in South Australia. That's across the country.
Yeah, that's true, brother. Mm. That's absolutely true.
My sister, good yarn with you. Thank you very much for shedding some light. Please do keep in touch and look, fight the good fight. Good luck with the ongoing inquiry. into removal of First Nation children in South Australia. Thank you very much, April. And sister, stay strong and we'll yarn soon, eh?
No worries, Trevor. Thank you so much for having me on your show. And to all your listeners, I hope to be on again to share the story of my inquiry report.
Lovely. Be in touch. Thank you. Thank you, April. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Deadly yarn there. Sad yarn. Strong yarn. April Laura, South Australian Commissioner for Aboriginal Children and Young People, and First Nation Mothers' Trauma of Baby Removals heard an inquiry calls to change the process. So there it is. This is the 21st century. We need to change, and things don't change. If things don't change, have your say. Yarn up strong. Add to the conversation here. National Talk Black.
Pat Carroll, see him talking about me. Ride around with a smiley on me. Get it a win and got it. Hey. Mama gave me life, the attitude is my daddy. Bless him, I'm gon' get it for him.
Get it for him.
I bought it, I'm gon' give it to him.
Give it to him.
I was always gonna make it. Hey. Never drop the ball, nobody's gon' take it.
He wakes up every morning, one thing on his mind. This ain't just a game, it's a way of life. Watching the players on his TV screen, saying I can do that, I wanna live that dream. So he stays focused with his goals ahead. Never lose a sight from the words that he said. Full of confidence, no doubt in his head. Still no rest after the blood, tears and sweat. Stays out late at the park after dark. Ball in his hand, in his eyes is a spark. Prepares for the weekend, big game coming up. Grand final fever, don't believe in being runner up. To know where he's going, gotta know where he's from. The sacrifice he made to train for this game. This story is his, a dreamer with big dreams. Only thing on his mind is that grand victory.
To the ground, I can hear the crowd roar. Drag him to the floor. I can hear that crowd bar. It's what I live for. Just to give the crowd more. It's what I live for. Just to hear that crowd roar. Just to hear that crowd roar.
See, you know where I come from. And I know where I'm going. It ain't a dream that I run from. We on, we on, we on. I get the ball with the fellas. Great finding. I feel it like a kid on. We on, we on, we on. Let him know that we on. We on, we on, we on. Let him know that we on. We on, we on, we on. Let him know that we on. We on, we on, we on. Let him know that we on. We on, we on, we on.
He's from humble beginnings, older brother, single mother. The man was never there, so we never met his father. Every Saturday he went down to the ground to support his big brother, and from there his love was found. From that point on, only had one goal. Put his heart in this game so he can make it to the pros. All the years of training, prepared him for this moment. Knows what he gotta do, don't let up for his opponent.
To the ground, I can hear the crowd roar.
Now he's on like a backpack. A top pick, reps his team on his snapback. Remembers the journey, deja vu when I was
what I left for. Just to give the crowd more.
Does it for the crowd, makes his hometown proud. The cheers get loud when he steps onto the ground. Wanted this his whole life and he's addicted to the sound.
I can hear that crowd roar. Let him know about. I can hear that crowd roar. See, you know where I come from. And you know where I'm going. It ain't a dream that I run from. We on, we on, we on. I get the ball with the fellas. Great finding him, talking about great I am. I feel it like a kid on. We on, we on, we on. See, you know where I come from.
I know where I come from.
And I know where I'm going.
And I know where I'm going.
It ain't a dream that I run from.
Yarn with yours truly, Trevor Tim, 2012 Murray from the Curry, coming to you live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns and Yidinji Country. That's BBM Bumbabrip Media, 98.7 FM, and we go across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. Oh, as I mentioned earlier, National Close the Gap Day is today, 21 March, as I mentioned. Close the Gap Day, National Close the Gap Day, should be 365 days a year. A lot of gaps to be closed and a lot of work to be done. Look, with that, I'm going to catch up a yarn now with Susan Teagan, Chief Executive of the National Rural Health Alliance. And talk about healthcare equity is one step to close the gap for rural First Nations people. And on the line, we have Susie. Susie, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Very well, thank you.
Good, good. Thank you very much for coming to the program. Where are you based?
Well, actually, today I'm in Canberra.
In Canberra.
The sitting week.
Okay, sitting week. There it is. Just let the people know, who you mob, where are you from, Susie?
Susie Teagan, National Rural Health Alliance.
Okay, how long have you held that reins for, Susie?
I've worked in rural, remote and regional Australia for the last 30 years, including in Alice Springs and Darwin.
Yes.
But I'm in this role I've been for about a year and a bit.
Okay. Enjoying that journey?
I am.
Good.
Well, it's such an important area, you know. 61% of Aboriginal people live in rural, remote and regional Australia.
Mm-hmm.
30% of the Australian population lives in those regions. So, you know, we need to look after them.
Exactly. Exactly. Because they're out in the sticks. Let's not forget about them. Very important. Exactly. All Australians. So we're talking about healthcare equity is one step to close the gap for the rural First Nations people. So enlighten us, please, Susie.
Sorry, what was that?
Sorry, enlighten us. We're talking about the healthcare equity.
Enlighten us. Yes. Thank you.
Please.
Thank you. First of all, the Alliance takes a real stand on closing the gap.
Yes.
And the National Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Health Plan, and because it's really important, we really need to achieve healthcare equity for First Nations people, especially for the almost 61% of people living in rural, regional and remote Australia. And it has to be a priority because the disparities in health compared to non-Indigenous populations, in particular in metropolitan areas, is enormous.
Enormous.
And we cannot continue to allow this gap not to be addressed.
Exactly. Susie, we're talking all facets, aren't we? We're talking education, we're talking housing, employment, all the above, health, life expectancy, all the above, aren't we?
Well, we are. I mean, the interesting thing is, in terms of children who are enrolled in secondary education, by the time they get to year 11, you've got 77% staying at school. And by the time they get to year 12, it's 57%.
Yeah.
So there is an issue that needs to be addressed to make sure that Aboriginal kids have the same opportunities and continue to, you know, have the opportunities in their career.
Mm. So the government's dropping the ball in so many areas, aren't they?
Yeah, so the gap that we have in life expectancy between Indigenous and non-Indigenous people is 6.8 years for males and 6.5 years for females in rural areas. And that goes to 12.4 years for males and females if the more remote you come. Mm. So addressing the health workforce shortage is one of the issues we need to address, and that is really about supporting the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander community-controlled organisations and making sure that they are supported to meet the targets for the reform. But in addition to that, we need to make sure that we're spending the time and the money and the support on young kids that are at school, so that they consider health and medical careers in future.
Yep.
And the Indigenous Allied Health Australia organisation, Australian Indigenous Doctors Association, Levitch's Institute's Action to Advance Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Leadership, and then MALPA project that works with primary schools to ensure that people actually think about health and medical careers. You know, you can't be something if you can't see it.
Well, exactly.
And so, you know, there's some really great initiatives and they need to be supported to continue the opportunities for Aboriginal kids in rural communities so that we can increase our medical and health workforce for rural, remote and regional Australia.
Susie, success breeds success. And if you look at such a simple system, educate our kids, take them further into tertiary education. They come back qualified, nurses, doctors, what have you, working back in their community. That's a deadly system, and a simple system if you look at it.
Well, exactly. And we need to recruit people, yes, like Aboriginal kids from those communities, and allow them to train in the rural training programs. Mm. So, because many of them don't want to leave country.
Yes.
Many of them want to be around their family. But we also need to support and increase the understanding of the mobs so that they can support their children. Because if you don't know what it takes to go through a university system, of course you're going to be, you know, worried that your kids are going to go away. And, I mean, obviously, if they need support, well, then it'll be there. And so it needs to be very much grassroots-led.
Yes.
It needs to be planned with the communities. And that is how you keep and you train people in your regions.
Mm. So, like I said, a simple system, so to speak. So any money spent in this area by government, taxpayers' money, it's not an expense. That's investment, is it not, Susie?
Well, it's an investment in the future.
Yes.
I mean, the costs downstream, if we kept Aboriginal people out of a hospital setting, which isn't a nice setting for many of them,
exactly,
from a historical perspective, if we keep people out of hospital because we are screening, because we're training our future workforce, because we are working with them to look at their local population health need, then you are actually keeping people out of an expensive and a system that they actually don't want to be part of.
Yes.
And so, you know, it really needs to be very much grassroots-led. And that's another reason why the National Rural Health Alliance has supported home ownership by Aboriginal people, in particular in rural, remote and regional Australia, where there's capacity for them to be supported to buy their own home. Because there's something about owning your own home. There's something about having a pride of place.
Exactly.
And there's plenty of overcrowding. So, you know, people should be able to have access to buying houses.
And we're talking necessity here. We're talking the 21st century, you know what I mean?
Absolutely. We're not a third world country.
Thank you. And some of our people are living third world standards, aren't they?
Well, absolutely.
Yep.
Aboriginal people and mainstream people in rural, remote and regional Australia are often treated like a last minute afterthought.
Yep.
They're included in the minority group discussion, and it's one of the first things that goes when you're negotiating at a table.
Yes.
And so what we're saying is we're tired of it.
Yep.
People in those communities and Aboriginal people are tired of it, and we have some solutions that we would like to work with the government on to make sure that the access to education, the access to healthcare, and the access to housing, which all lead to better health outcomes and better economic outcomes, are supported.
Susie, thank you for the yarn. Very important. And the fact that we're having this yarn on the National Close the Gap Day, 21 March, look, that's more empowerment, more meat on the bone, so to speak. But thank you for your yarn, and big shout out to National Rural Health Alliance and the work that they're doing, your team. And thank you for the yarn. And we'll talk soon, Susie.
Oh, we really appreciate your time. And this is a very important report, and we very much support it.
Lovely. Thank you, Susie. You take care. All the best. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
There it is. Susie Teagan, her name is, Chief Executive of the National Rural Health Alliance. And we're talking about healthcare equity is one step to close the gap for the rural First Nations people. And look, some horrific numbers, but as we all know, the numbers are pretty high in regarding closing the gap in all facets, employment, education, health, housing, all the above. And like I said, it's 21st century, and here we are in a first world country, and some of our people live in the third world standards. Not good at all. So any money, any taxpayer money going towards